So that story, and there's a much longer version of the arbitrator's version and the suspension and so forth. It's more interesting to look at the prior story or listen to the prior account, which we're going to hear now.
First at 5, an attorney for a San Antonio police officer fired for allegedly leaving a sandwich containing feces for a homeless person says the incident never happened, and he's calling out Chief McManus and city leaders for their decision to let him go.
Our Charles Gonzalez is live with reaction from the officer's attorney who is appealing the firing. This is actually a statement that was released by Chief McManus earlier today saying, quote, this was a vile and disgusting act that violates our guiding principles of treating all with integrity, compassion, fairness, and respect, end quote.
Earlier today, we spoke with the Luckhorse attorney about this. Our Charles Gonzalez now live at Public Safety Headquarters. Charles, we understand that the attorney said that this was just a joke and that they're going to appeal that termination.
Yeah, attorney Ben Cifuentes, who's representing Officer Matthew Luckhurst, says his client made dark gallows humor to relieve some of the stress he and other officers face from working to remove homeless individuals from the downtown area. Now, he added that there's no evidence supporting the chief's decision. An internal affairs investigation began in July on Officer Matthew Luckhurst, a 5-year veteran who reportedly told a fellow officer that he left a sandwich filled with feces by a homeless individual. Now, on Thursday, citizen and police boards agreed on an indefinite suspension for Luckhurst, essentially firing him. His attorney told us by phone today that his client is innocent.
He made a joke as if it were true when it was not true, and it's been repeated and distorted. There's no eyewitness, no video camera showing that what he alleges in fact happened.
Now, we did attempt to speak with Officer Luckhurst at his home, but he declined comment. But several city leaders that we've said have spoken out about the alleged incident, which Cifuentes calls premature. And we spoke with Councilman Joe Cryer, who called such an act reprehensible, but added that he doesn't have all the information.
I don't know enough of the facts to make a definitive judgment, and I'm a lawyer for 25 plus years, and if there's one thing I've learned, it's wait and get the facts and then make a decision.
And during our phone interviews, Cifuentes said he's often dealt with what he called sloppy investigations by SAPD's internal affairs and said several letters of suspension written by Chief McManus contained items that turned out not to be true. Now, there's still no word yet on when the appeals process would begin. Reporting live at SAPD Public Safety Headquarters, Charles Gonzalez, KSAT 12 News.
So what this boils down to is that here's a cop who, here's what the written online version of this, or addition to the news, the audio and video news says. The incident was reported in early May when Luckhurst bragged to a fellow officer that he had picked up some feces, placed it in a slice of bread, and put it in a styrofoam container next to the homeless man, police officials said. The officer reported that he told Luckhurst to go back and throw it away, police officials said. The officer said he saw Luckhurst go back and assumed that he threw away the container. Police have looked for the homeless man but haven't found him. His identity isn't known. So the reason, and this is having read both this and the other description, the reason this case is, the guy's back on the force, and it was on the force because it was a 180-day window that they missed in terms of disciplining this guy. But given this narrative, and again, it's hard to tell where the reporter is getting it. I guess he's getting it from the fellow officer whose name is not mentioned. They should really be interviewing the fellow officer. But it sounds kind of unlikely that the fellow officer would direct him to go back and do this, pick up the alleged shit sandwich in the styrofoam container, if he didn't take seriously what the guy said and regard this as being, you know, in accord with his normal conduct. And what it really, really shows you is just, to me, how, what a low level of priority any kind of safety or respect there is for homeless people in the San Antonio Police Department. Anyway, you be the judge. It's the whole thing stinks. And on a local grim note, today, Sunday, March 24th, is being pushed as a Depot Park Day of Action, expressing our concerns about the proposed homeless encampment. And that's not what it is, of course. It's a safe sleeping spot at night for a 50-people area in Depot Park and our neighborhood. Bring your family, friends, food, and walking shoes to canvas our neighborhood. And that's going to be today. Probably has already begun, if you're listening to this broadcast, 12 to 3 p.m. in Depot Park in Santa Cruz. So if you want to check out Bigots on Parade, or should we say Paranoia in the Parking Lots, check out the Depot Park activity and bring your video camera. You can show wonderful videos of folks attempting to stop a... Not that I'm a fan of this particular solution for safe sleeping zones, but this is really something that I think anti-homeless organizations and individuals throughout the city would do in any place in the city. They don't want to, quote, enable the homeless. That is to say, they want to make things as miserable, even as survival hostile, as possible for homeless people in Santa Cruz, regardless of whether they were born here or not. And you have to say, oh, well, this is just compassion fatigue. This can't really be true. But unfortunately, when people get together and they start operating on the basis of these paranoid needle mania memes that are being pushed around and shoveled out like horse shit to people, and they're actually eating it up, so to speak, it's a toxic situation for the people who are imbibing these mythologies and for those who are suffering as a consequence of this new norm of intolerance and hostility and fear that is creeping over the city. It's nothing new, of course. This was a Take Back Santa Cruz staple and a city council majority for quite a while. And now it looks like it's still the city council's spine through Martine Bernal and his assistant city managers through Shadow Mayor Cynthia Matthews. It's depressing. Anyway, 12 to 3 Depot Park today. Check out the Get Rid of the Homeless Day of Action, or No Homeless Encampment in Our Neighborhood group. And I'm on Pacific Avenue. It's a little after 3, no, a little before 4 on March 13th. Listening to a man with an accordion in front of Marini's. Suitcase is open. He has some donations in it. And the sun is out. He is playing on a bench. He's composing, perhaps. And with
Alex Armstrong.
And Alex, are you a longtime accordionist or just recent?
Pretty recent, I guess. I don't know if I would consider myself pretty recent, like a year.
How is the community treating your accordion player here on Pacific?
I'd say all right. There's, a mixed crowd. I sometimes I'm not sure if everyone gets told to move occasionally, depending on if you're where you're playing.
No one has invoked the old use an accordion, go to jail law.
No.
Good. Is this your first round on Pacific, or have you been doing this a lot?
I've probably been doing it a handful of times.
And any hassles from police, rangers, merchants?
No.
Any interesting experiences that sort of stick in your mind that you want to pass on?
The most unique experience that I've had so far has just been one angry store clerk who was annoyed that I was playing too close to her building, and she wanted to play her own music, and I guess my music was not to her taste.
And what was your response to this?
I told her that I would move, and then I looked around after she had left to, you know, look for another bench, but most benches were, I found, difficult to take since there were other musicians, and I didn't want to impede on any other musicians' space, so, and my accordion is pretty heavy, so, but I then sat back down and tried playing again. She came back out because her door was wide open right in front of me, so she could hear it, and so then she seemed pretty agitated, so I then proceeded to move to, like, 20 feet down to another bench.
And did you interfere with some other musical performer?
No, I did not. Thankfully, yeah.
Dig it. I see you made about $8. How long do you have to play to get, I don't know, $10 worth of donation?
Usually a couple hours, I guess.
And how does that feel? Does it feel like you're spending time in an enjoyable pastime? Does it feel tedious? Does it feel onerous? Does it feel exhilarating? Or does it just vary?
I never really feel... I just feel happy just playing something.
How long have you played the accordion?
Just 1 year, probably.
Anything you've composed yourself?
I guess so. I've never written anything down, but I like making up stuff.
Do you sing and dance as well?
I don't dance, but I sing sometimes, yeah.
What do you sing?
The only song that I really sing much is Ostrovo. It's a Serbian.
Are you Serbian yourself?
No.
And where did you pick up this Serbian chanty?
Internet.
Oh, really?
Accordion Squeezebox group online. That's what they call it. Huh. They have a bunch of songs on there.
And is your music online?
Yeah, all the music that I get, yeah.
Is your particular performance online?
No.
Are you able to pay the rents here in Santa Cruz, or are you outside?
I'm pretty fortunate to have acquired a RA job, a residential advisor job, so I get free. My housing is compensated as like pay. I don't get paid for the job, but I do get free room and board with the school at UCSC. So, I used to live in my van before I got this job, which is why I consider myself very fortunate.
Any hassles while in your van?
No, not much.
And were you parked mainly on campus or downtown or somewhere else?
On campus.
And so UCSC police didn't bother you, or you had a very well camouflaged van?
Camouflaged.
Feel free to tell us the secrets of your success. Or not, as the case may be.
Well, I would say that the best way to go about it is plausible deniability, so having a vehicle that is plausibly not likely to have somebody living inside of it. Don't drive any camper RVs or anything like that. You want a basic painter's van a cargo van. Cargo van.
And how long were you on campus under this false identity?
A year.
And during that time, no police stops?
Like just a couple.
And were you caught in the act of sleeping?
Yeah.
What was the response of the armed officer? Did he do his duty?
They tried following up, you know, because it was a maybe suspicious looking vehicle. They couldn't necessarily see inside of it, so they tried looking inside of it, but thankfully there were no windows on my cargo van, which is why it was to my advantage. You just be quiet and you don't respond, and therefore they have no reason to enter the vehicle, and so they can't.
They did not begin to shake the vehicle back and forth?
No shaking, but definitely lots of banging and yelling.
How long did that continue?
Like 5 minutes or something.
How many times did it happen?
2 times, I think. Yeah.
Did you respond by going tick, tick, tick?
No.
Probably not. Well, having attempted to, having gotten your account, anything you want to add about life as a retired van criminal, current accordionist on the street?
I guess I don't have anything to add.
And we've been talking with?
Can I use an alias?
Of course.
We'll say a Hans Zimmer.
A Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Thank you, a Hans Zimmer.
Thank you.
So it's nearly 2 o'clock on March 20th, 2019. I'm walking my way up to the Ross campground, taking up 8 or 9 parking spaces as a police vehicle hauling a police substation, but no police officer is visible in sight. Attorney Anthony Prince is due to be up here chatting with the potential plaintiffs in a lawsuit that is meant to protect the Ross Camp residents from an April 17th eviction date. The ground has been moved somewhat. There are 10 porta potties here. Anthony Prince has arrived. There's a major, I guess, several dumpsters, a large red Sharps container. Temps now fill the area that had been previously a sort of a secondary walkway.
No, I'm at the top. I'm right by the dumpster near the wash station.
And it looks, the path going through the campground may be a little wider than usual, but it's a sunny day, which is good after a rainy night.
Abby.
Talking with?
Spoke with Abby. Abby's like, you know.
No? Yes? And the legal conference with Anthony Prince was requested by Anthony and the participants, mainly by Anthony, that it be kept kind of quiet. As lawyers are wont to do, they want to keep their sort of their legal strategies sub rosa until they hit the courts. I'm not entirely necessarily on board with that, but I don't want to. I don't think it's necessary to go into the details of his strategy. I mean, we've already talked actually about the legal case. In fact, his initial legal conference about the rights of homeless folks and the significance of the Boise versus Martin decision, the requirements of an injunction, the kind of stuff you need to get in order to demonstrate what's required to a judge to get them to issue an order stopping the clearing of the camp or showing there's imminent danger to the folks that are being forced up onto the streets. These are, you know, actually useful bits of information for folks, particularly poor folks, particularly homeless folks in the community to know if they ever want to make such arguments themselves. So I really try to always resist the temptation to immediately kind of bow down before attorneys' beliefs that you have to keep everything quiet as part of some tremendous legal strategy. I have trouble with it, and I think properly so. I did do some discussing of the Ross Camp on the same day that you heard this last little piece of audio in the previous show that I did. If you can always check earlier shows if you want to catch more bits and pieces. And I guess that's what we're going to go into now. Here's some more interviews at the Ross Camp. And this interview happened, I think, several days before, as we were waiting for Susie O'Hara and her associate Megan to come and discuss with the fire chief and with a considerable number of people from the Ross camp. Although I think we've done this on two occasions, I may be confusing the two meetings. One was smaller, one was larger. But the idea was to get folks involved in cleaning up the camp, working with the city authorities to bring in large dumpsters to help provide more space and safer and cleaner camp setup, less fire danger and so forth. As of a few days ago, that had happened a little bit, but not to the extent that some folks had hoped. Again, one of the concerns that some of us had were watching this situation was that the actual claim that the city authorities under Susie O'Hara and the fire chief and so forth actually have a real interest in any kind of long-term safety at the Ross camp is, I think, misplaced and ridiculous. Their main objective is to essentially prepare the camp for demolition and dispersal on April 17th. And one of the ways to do that is to appear to be friends with buddies for leaders around homeless folks in the camp so that homeless people turn to them. And when the April 17th date comes, they don't resist leaving. They just all kind of quietly pad off into the distance, even though that may just be the sidewalk where they get left with a pat on the back and the good luck. So I've advised people to be very cautious about work instead on organizing themselves into what they're going to do next, given the fact that the city's main objective is to pander to fears, bigotry, and theoretical plans for upcoming so-called navigation centers and shelters that don't currently exist, that haven't been shown to be effective in, because there's a fundamental problem. If you're a transition center and you're transitioning people to nowhere, it's going to end up doing just that. So it's a problem. Anyway, here's a conversation with Michael Sweat, who's one of the Ross Camp Council.
Ross Camp, it's about 5 to 10 to 3. I'm talking with
Michael Sweat.
Mike, you're a resident.
Yes, I'm also the spokesman for the encampment here.
And how long have you been in this position?
Homeless, 23 years.
Spokesman for the camp.
Spokesman for the camp ever since it opened, pretty much, like the week after it opened. Nobody was going to the meetings or trying to find out what was going on with the money that we were supposed to get. So I just felt like I'd take it upon myself to do it since I'm part of it, you know. So I did.
And what's been happening since the last city council meeting where you actually spoke out?
The city manager and a couple of other people came here and talked to me. We've had a meeting a day before yesterday with the city manager's a protege that I forget her name, Susie or
Susie O'Hara.
Yes, and another lady and
Dina Scholl.
Yes, Dina. And what we did, we come to the decision that we're gonna work together on this, and then we have a committee here of a few people from the encampment, but they want to see people putting themselves forward with this. So we're telling people who that we know can function in a organized camp, you know, and not be, you know, messing things up or having a bunch of people over, or, you know, just things that we don't need. And we're trying to choose those people out of the ones that's here to kind of get into that encampment that we're going to come up with.
Now, were the city manager and his two associates trying to get you to agree to move to another place?
Well, you know what? My thoughts is move myself, because this is a bad location. We're located right here next to the highway 1 and highway 9, where people come from out of town on vacation or visiting or whatever, and we're like something like a spectacle to see here. We're like on blast right out here in front of everybody. And so when they drive by and see that, they go, "Oh, what is that?" You know, it's an encampment. Well, if they known the whole story behind the thing, you know, they would understand that we've been shuffled around like, you know, like animals, actually, just pushed from cage to cage until they felt like they wanted, they had a place where they could, you know, keep us and have some kind of control. But thanks to the Supreme Court, now they have to play a different game. So,
well, I know that there was some meetings in the last couple of weeks with the Union of the Homeless, attorney Anthony Prince, and I know that Alicia was there. You think folks here are interested in becoming members of the Union of the Homeless? Here, for example, is a victim. What's your name, sir?
My name is Daniel Bolton, and I was born and raised here. You know, I've been homeless for going on 7 years now, 6.5, something like that. Yeah.
How's the camp treating you?
The camp? The camp is, the people here, they're cool. You know, they're respectful to an extent, as long as you don't disrespect them, you know, just like anywhere else. But, like my friend was saying, we've been shuffled around, you know, and I feel like they purposely put us right here, because like he said, you know, you get the tourists coming from all over, and when they get off the freeway to Santa Cruz, this is the first thing they see. And then you have the locals where they get frustrated with the sight because it's an eyesore, you know? And I can admit that.
What do you think about having a union of folks here who are kind of joining together? Like Mike here has described himself as a representative. I think so. Mike, what's the story? Is this water for general distribution or for people at the meeting? Do we know?
I'm not quite sure, but...
Grab one for
me,
now.
You can have one. I mean, for all I care, yeah. You can have one.
So what I was asking you, again, your name is?
Daniel.
Sorry, Daniel. Mike, how are you finding it in terms of getting meetings together, and what do you think of this Union of the Homeless stuff? And would be something that Daniel, you'd be interested in?
Well, I'm very interested.
I'm not really sure about that Union of the Homeless. I was here when that guy came, and a lot of times you hear these statements, and people are saying things that they want to do, but they wait until somebody else has taken a step up and put their foot down and said no more. Okay, well, these people should have been here a long time ago. All of a sudden now they're here, that we've got something in progress. We've got a movement in progress.
And then they want to take it over? You
know? And then maybe they want to take it over. I mean, you know, they might be more qualified than I am or anybody else out here is. But you know what? You got to start something before you can... You know, you can make something out of anything. You have to start it. You have to begin somewhere. And nobody was stepping up and beginning until I did. You know, nobody was going down there telling them, no, we're not going to do this. No, we're not going to move here. We're not going to move there. We're tired of moving. This is what's going to happen.
Jump on the bandwagon.
And now everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon and get a piece of the pie.
It'll be nice if there's a bandwagon so that somebody can grab some
pie. Yeah, I can't guarantee anything. You know, this life is a weird life, and strange things happen. But this I can say, I'm not going to stop pushing for them to be able to construct their own place to go stay and have something to do with, you know, policing themselves. And, you know, this gives them a chance to have something of their own. And it's not like a real home, but it's a home to them. So... it'll give them a chance to get used to that, and then later on in life when they make moves to different levels of where they're at, then, you know, they won't be a shock to them, you know, having a place. They'll know how to function with it and how to keep it up. And, you know, people learn from things you show them, so you just got to show some people, you know.
Now, Mike, did you find when you spoke with city manager and crew that they were at least acknowledging they weren't going to move in on the 15th to move people out of here?
Well, when I spoke to them and I let them know specifically about Nathan versus...
Martin versus Boise.
Yeah, Mark versus Boise. And so they understand what it is. It's like an open and shut case. You know, you either build a facility that'll handle everybody that you have homeless and have showers or whatever that they need, and get it done with the money that you got, or you know, you can give that money back and we'll try it another way.
Did they agree that they would not be moving on the camp in the next week or two?
Yeah, they're not going to move us because they can. They know that. I mean, it's not a secret.
You see, the mayor has said in public statements as recently as Sunday, she is committed to eliminating the Ross camp by the deadline, which is the 15th.
Okay.
But she can't really do that because the council's voted the other way.
No.
This actually was a recording that was made on the 11th when there was a March 15th deadline. There's now an April 17th deadline. Now, maybe that gives folks who are living in the campground some hope insofar as they don't want to be displaced without a place to go, that there'll be another deadline set up on the 17th. That seems to be the narrative of Drew Glover, who has claimed that even though we won't be at this council meeting on March 26th, he'll be at the next one, which will be in 2 weeks, and he will then be able to point out that there's inadequate shelter spaces that have been opened up for the people in the camp. The claims of Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and Martine Bernal of the city manager's office notwithstanding, and therefore they can be postponed again.
I'm committed to getting rid of this place too, because it's not really what I'm calling a camp that we could make something permanent out of. The location is lousy, and we just came here because this was a place that we felt like we could go, and they allowed us to go, and then they got us in here, and then they start sending all these groups at us complaining about what we're doing and how we're living and the things like that. You know, we take the blows in stride and keep on moving. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to stand up for everybody out here regardless. They can put, you know, they can do whatever they want to or say whatever they want to. I'm going to have an answer for it because I do my homework. You know, I look at the history of
what's you'll be at the council meeting tomorrow, really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely be at the council meeting.
Many Spanish-speaking people in this encampment?
Yes, there are. There's some on the council.
That's good.
Yeah, there's a couple on the council.
How is the council open to other folks who want to join up, or is
absolutely
it full up?
Absolutely. Anybody who feels strongly about what we're trying to do here is welcome to join the council and come and have their two cents heard and you know, have a voice in something finally, in something that belongs to you. So.
And does this include housed people or just folks at the Ross Camp or Ross Camp and other homeless people?
This all homeless people. There's 5,000 homeless in Santa Cruz County. I don't know where they get these numbers of 2,000, but they're walking around with a blindfold on half the time then, because there's 5,000 or better homeless here in Santa Cruz County. And the only way to really
sign up if you want to talk to her, that woman there, if you want to be part of this group.
The only way to really to really get a hold on what we're trying. Well, I'll say it like this: if we keep the meetings up and they keep coming and communicating, we communicate with them, things will happen. Anytime you have communication, it's always going to be solving problems and making things better. But this is what we've been waiting for, is a chance to at least be able to communicate with them without them assuming what we were thinking or how we felt.
Well, thank you, Mike. Anything you want to conclude with for the moment?
Yeah, I just hope people remember me for doing something that was noble. I mean, putting myself out here I've been out here for 23 years homeless. Legally, I've been homeless because I've never signed a lease or anything. So I know what it is to survive out here in the rainy seasons and all that. I know all the stuff they go through. And these people work hard to survive, and they need to start getting things that are sent here for them, money that's appropriated for them. They need to start seeing that and being able to guide them funds where they need to go themselves, or have at least have a word in it.
Yeah.
Sure, one.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Mike.
How
you doing? Drew Glover, nice to meet you.
We have a couple of other people, but he's just ran away.
Did you come earlier?
Today?
Yeah.
No, not today.
I got a text from Tampa as the hurricane approaches, the biggest ever seen. We're seeking higher ground here. How are you out west in the land of the evergreens? I got a cloth upon my face, hibernating in place as the ash falls all around. But at least I'm in the northwest, breathing smoke from all the fires, instead of in the southeast being drowned. The president is speaking in North Dakota, where all the crops have just failed. He said, isn't it great? The pipeline is finished. We can keep mining and burning all the shale. He said, we'll be okay, as he sweltered in the heat, standing on the parched and arid ground. While I'm in the northwest, breathing smoke from all the fires, instead of in the southeast being drowned. Treating you. That's how you greet your neighbors these days. Has your home been flooded? Have your forests burned up? Can you see as you drive through the haze? Come visit if you can. Might be nicer here than Tampa. We can take a walk and listen to the crackling sound. Here in the northwest, breathing smoke from all the fires, instead of in the southeast being drowned. Here in the northwest, breathing smoke from all the fires, instead of in the southeast being drowned.
So I'm talking with
Russell.
And Russell
Crowell Jr.
And you say that you're concerned about people being hassled for standing with a sign at a median?
Yes, you know, or a large or a small sign. I figure that, you know, it's awesome Food Not Bombs hangs a sign up, you know, to let people know that there's food available. It seems like the individual or, you know, people in masses should be able to post signs saying that they need food or clothing or housing. And be able to show up at City Hall or Town Hall meetings and when they have them scheduled and... You know, ask what they can do to help out and how they can get a job building more houses for themselves and for other people.
Are you outside yourself?
Yes.
At the Ross camp or somewhere else?
I'm just, well, I'm outside, wherever.
Any hassles?
Street hassles? I see some, you know. I've seen people get hit. I've been taken advantage of. People have taken money from me. It's not right.
Do you usually sleep alone or in company?
No, I usually sleep alone.
And do you sleep generally in the same place every night or different places?
Usually in different places. I haven't found one place. I like to find a place in particular. I like to stay at the shelter inside.
Which shelter?
With a bed. I don't know. I like to go to Janus. Janus would be nice. I like to see about getting back on methadone and have a stable place that I can...
Thank you.
Have a drawers with to put my clothes and keep my...
When was the last time you were in Janus?
It's been quite a few years. I'd say at least 7.
And the last shelter you've used here in Santa Cruz was?
Maybe longer than that. I think probably 10 years ago.
What about other shelters? Ever been to one more recently?
I think I stayed at the shelter at River Street Shelter.
How long ago?
Probably about 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
So it's been that long since you've been in a shelter here?
Yes.
You prefer to be outside?
No, I prefer to be inside, but they ask you not to drink while you're staying there, but I went out and drank, and I was honest about it. And they said, at least be honest. So I was honest, and they asked me to leave, so
Were you drunk and crazy, or were you just...
No. I just told him that I had a beer and that I was being honest.
You had a beer? For heaven's sake. Maybe two. This is shocking. I don't know what to say.
It happens.
I'll forgive you, but don't ever let this happen again.
Yes, I mean, alcohol, it could be found in all fruits and vegetables, as well as meat. You make alcohol just about out of anything.
Dig it. And we've been talking with?
Russell, Edward Crowell.
Any other thoughts, Russell?
Live, let live. Try to help people understand the reality of what our needs are and how we can help each other get back again closer to our families, such as making it easier to find somebody online, phone numbers of family members would be helpful.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. What's your name, Adam?
Amanda.
And Amanda, you say you graduated from what?
UCSC with a bachelor's in cultural anthropology.
You've got yourself a sheepskin, as they say.
Oh, is that what they say?
Some say that.
Oh, well, I've got a sheepskin, yeah.
And what are you going to do with it other than, use it for waste material?
Well, first I'm going to, plant it, let it grow.
Yeah.
No, but I don't know, maybe...
Jobs opening up all over the country for you.
I don't know about jobs and an anthropology degree. Unfortunately, it's not the most rewarding, but hopefully I'll get to do something that'll bring me joy. That's all I care about.
But you're here at Food Not Bombs.
Yes, which brings me joy.
And what is your next step? Are you intend to actually do anything to help end this state of poverty, misery, and injustice that is plaguing us?
I just wrote a 12-page paper on, living in cars and living on the streets of Santa Cruz. And my professor actually told me that we should edit it and try to get it up on, a local talk radio or something so I could talk to people about it.
Summarize the paper.
Oh, I just talk about how, when you're living on the streets, it's so important to have community to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and to also just be your own sort of you've got to be your own, I forget what the word is, but you have to stand up for yourself, especially when it comes to mental health and just our own rights.
Resist police oppression?
Yes, absolutely. And
have you ever had that
community
experience in Santa Cruz?
Yeah,
when
definitely.
When was the last time that happened?
It hasn't been it's been a few months since the police have bothered me, but, countless times they bother my friends and just all over town, and I think that that's a big thing, but with community is how we can even stand up to that, because when we're in numbers, they're more afraid of us, and that's usually when they don't want to, come up to people when they see a large group, so I think that a lot of people, especially the homeless, are fed up, and that if we actually just got people all on the same page, I think that's the biggest problem in Santa Cruz is there's 20 things and they're all going in different directions, and if we just kind of brought everyone in and put them on the same route, maybe we could actually do something together.
Now, are you indoors or outdoors?
I'm in my car. I'm in middle ground.
Have you any hassle for being in your car?
I think the most hassle has just been once or twice, people told me I couldn't park there. And a few times, cops have been you gotta move. But nothing really.
And any connection with the snails up on campus?
Yeah. I know the snails up on campus, and I'm kind of a part of it. But now that I'm graduating, I feel I'll just be more of a
freelance
resource.
Turtle?
Yeah. A freelance turtle, definitely.
I know. I've tried to reach them, and they don't respond. We're hoping that there can be some mutual stuff.
I can totally put you in touch if you want. I have the main guy's email, and I talk to him all the time. I have his phone number and everything.
Well,
so
let me give you my number. You can give me a call.
Okay, I think I might have yours, but I might not.
It's right here, and it's 423-HUFF somewhere.
Cool.
There you go.
Yeah, cool.
Call me up and... put me in touch with the snail gang. And
you know what's interesting is I was telling my class that we did that sleep-in a few months ago, and every single one of them, and I was the biggest thing was we did this so that house people could just see what it was like and experience it.
Where and when the sleep-in
was. It was out here at the post office.
Yes, indeed.
Remember?
I do,
and
indeed.
No one showed up that even lived in a house, and I told the people in my class that, though. I was we kind of threw this so that house people could understand what it was like and know
how. Well, I did show up and spend an hour in my car nearby.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, people who aren't already involved in it. But I told them, and every single one of them were oh, I would do that. So, I feel maybe we could do something else, now that, it's summer and more people want to get involved. Ah! Thank you. Perfect. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. I want to
get the key. So give me a call, and we will try to get you more involved. There's a Ross camp is looking for volunteers to help get them put together a lawsuit to end the attacks on the Ross camp. They attempt to move it unless until they have places for people to go, which, of course, they just want to get rid of it. That's their plan. On April 17th, they have a drop-dead date for it. But we're trying to fight back, or they're trying to fight back. And as a distant supporter, I say, right on, go in there and get them, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, if you've got a number, give me a call. Give me. You got a number you can be reached at?
Yeah.
Why don't you write it down on one of these flyers? Well, I interview this guy over here who I haven't seen in a while. See if he's got any news for us. Do I have a pen? Of course not.
I only get one right there.
Fair
I'm
enough.
I'm just going to throw this food away and then I'll...
Fair enough. And we've been talking with...
Amanda Porter.
Thanks, Amanda. All right, what's your name, sir?
Henry Joseph Lopez.
Henry, have you been, should we say, hauled away to the Huskow in the last couple months?
A little bit.
And how did that come about, if you wish to say?
I was just resting, and then I had a...
Resting without a permit?
Well, I don't use permits, or
I
don't believe in that religion or whatever.
I see.
So I just told him I, you know, declining their services and, like, sovereignly move on, and they friggin' pulled my knife. They disarmed me and freaking tackled me and used brutal force.
Thank you.
But I just told the judge, you know, I'm sovereign. Like, I freaking don't carry a knife tool as a weapon. So he released me.
How long were you held in the lockup?
Only a few days.
Anything interesting experiences there you want to pass on?
Yeah, the equinox. The pre-equinox, the sun... dissipated the clouds and created a circular rainbow.
What about indoors? What happened indoors?
Oh, indoors?
In the actual jail itself.
Oh, there? They friggin' locked me in a friggin' room. Didn't let me, you know, socialize with anybody and, like, barely... only let me take a couple showers.
Did they call you a psychiatric case?
No.
Good. You were essentially held over the weekend, or what was the deal? Because I remember there were a couple of pirate or a Marty came to a meeting of the Conscience in Action. You talked about your case.
Yeah, it was just over the weekend.
That's good. So you've been out since. You're still outside.
Yep.
Been over to Ross Camp at all?
No, not really.
What do you think about their attempt to disperse Ross Camp?
They're either going to do it or they're not.
I mean, do you feel the people there should be, they're fighting that, saying they should be allowed to stay? What's your opinion, if it makes any difference?
Well, my opinion is, you know, those people, basically, you know, to have any sort of respect from the city, you know, need to stop using drugs and, you know, bringing, you know, crime to the town, because that's what everyone's scared of is the, you know, we don't want a bunch of drug addicts running the streets, you know.
Do you know many of the people out at Ross Camp, or do you just sort of take the NIMBY hysteria for face value?
Well, now that it's spring, I see the differentiation of more people coming to the beach and the warm weather. So, I mean, if we try to cut out the freaking addicts, then hopefully, you know, that wouldn't spread, because you know what it's like when a fractal starts, you can't stop it. You know what I mean? Unless you take out all of it, boom, and start a new path.
So perhaps you would favor the Hitlerian solution of eliminating people who are, oh, I don't know, mentally ill, addicted, disabled, those who are, shall we say, not full contributing citizens, helping the economic community for the tourists.
And all types of ancient geometry and code, that's how it works.
Well,
either survive and agree with the majority, or you end up society's example.
We've been talking with that philosopher, man.
Henry Joseph Lopez.
Thank you, Henry.
Santa Cruz's finest environmental scientist.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll keep that in mind.
Therefore, I don't work for the government.
I would hope not. Talking with?
Okay, I'm Violet Garcia from Sacramento, California. Mm-hmm. This doesn't happen over there.
And what are you referring to?
food, not bombs.
Is that good or bad?
That's bad because that's the capital, so I want to take this back.
So you would... Sacramento doesn't have a Food Not Bombs, huh?
No, they do not.
I know they have what they have, loaves and fishes.
Yeah, I volunteer over there.
How is it?
It's very wonderful. In fact, I'm not really Catholic, but Bishop Quinn that started the whole thing, he just died. And last Sunday was his funeral.
What brings you to Santa Cruz?
I just retired from the National Guard, and I was in the Army over there in Steep Gulagin. I joined the National Guard in 90, but then Desert Storm hit, and I just retired. And I've come back a broken soldier.
How long have you been outside recently?
3 weeks now.
Yeah. Santa Cruz, or mostly?
Well, I'm in the south from Watsonville right now because they're all full here. So I'm in the Salvation Army in Watsonville.
How is that?
It's nice, but I have all my doctor's appointments here, but they're all full here. But it's real nice. Mm-hmm. It's the Salvation Army in Watsonville.
Is it full in Watsonville?
No, it's not. And it has women and children on one side, and then on the other side is the men. And the churches come and give us a big spread of food every day.
How are the rules about, you know, coming and going?
Oh, on the weekend, they don't have the day shelter open, but they do Monday through Friday. You leave at 8:30, 8 o'clock, and then you come back at 9. You can do laundry. You can just hang out. They donate clothes, all kinds of stuff.
So you have to leave for half an hour?
Yeah. And we take showers up to like 8 o'clock at night, smoking in, showers in, and then they turn the lights off at 9 o'clock.
What about pets?
Pets are allowed.
Wow. And what's the capacity of the shelter?
Okay, there's 4 sets of bunk beds. So that's 2, 4, 6. For the men, has about 16, and the women have, with children, about 16 plus their children. So that's like about 10 people, women, and then which one lady has 4 little girls, little boy and girls. So it's for families also.
Sounds good. And so are we talking 20, 30, 40 people?
Probably around 40, because 20 with the women and kids, and then 20 with the, if they're at full capacity, but they're not right at this moment in time. And if anybody's looking for a shelter and can't get it here, like I just called the warming center, and because it's sunny, they're not open. But if they go over to Watsonville on the 91X from the metro, it'll get you right there.
And can you just walk in on the very night and get in?
Yeah, or? And then they're open all the way till June, and they're getting a grant till November.
That sounds good.
Yeah, and they might go full year if the grant comes through. It means 12 months of the year.
Yeah, good. And we've been talking with?
Violet Garcia.
Violet, anything you want to add?
I just love this program. This is just the first I've seen flyers, but I've been in and out of hospitals.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a couple of years here.
Yeah, I just moved here in October because I just retired.
Well, welcome to Santa Cruz again.
Yes, I was a hippie in the 60s.
And then National Guard?
No, but between that, in 1982, I lived in San Jose and worked in Scotts Valley. Then I moved over here. But my company went bankrupt, so I went back to Sacramento where Mom is. And that's where my son's. And they're in Sacramento.
And again, we've been talking with
Violet Garcia, Sergeant Violet A. Garcia, retired California National Guard, U.S. Army.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Over and out.
All right. Well, I forgive you.
I joined the National Guard. I did not go over there because I wanted to.
Good for you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad I'm back.
All right. We are too.
No bomb.
All right.
This is Elise.
At the town clock, kind of. We're actually across from it at 6:30 at night. This Food Not Bombs breaks down.
So, one of the things that I just have to say is I'm really concerned about the hate that's going around about this. I think the site is called something like Nextdoor Online, and the total exaggerations and just deplorable depictions of people experiencing homelessness, and the fact that Chief Mills actually directed people to this Seattle's Dying video. And it's just totally anecdotal. Even the Good Times said so, that it's not very factual. And it's just we're at the level where we really are going to have to watch this carefully, because it's really inciting hate and violence against homeless people, and I'm really concerned about that right now. It's March 23rd, Saturday, and I think that if we don't really push back on this hate and these really false reports of homeless people, you know, just the exaggerations, for example, just at City Council last Tuesday, that people feel that they can make, you know, just inventing all these stories, to make homeless people look bad, to call and make sure everybody's considered a some kind of criminal, drug addict, deplorable, evil person instead of, you know, somebody. And just painting everybody with this brush is really bad. But the fact that the Chief Mills tweeted people...
Our chief.
Our police chief.
Choo-choo, the chief.
The chief tweeted some really hateful stuff and also directing people to this video. And then it was cited over and over and over again in the last city council meeting. I think that that is a call, actually, that's, you know, irresponsible at very least, and actually inciting hate and violence against homeless people.
And you will be putting out a counter video.
I just think we should counter it all. And it goes hand in hand with all the obstruction that the city government and the city managerial staff and so forth are doing to make sure that the progressives who were voted into office are not able to do almost anything. They're not able to put things on the agenda. They're not able to have meetings so that they can figure out their work schedule and their work priorities with the others, the more conservative elements. And so I think what we're going to really start having to do in this community is having more in-depth dialogue about race, about class, about mental health issues, about the lack of housing and how that creates homeless people, and really stop allowing the hate mongers to, you know, have things their way, because they're just getting all this help from the police and the chief and people like Cynthia Matthews and people on council like Donna Myers, the latest Cynthia Matthews.
But let's not forget
minion.
Our friend Susie O'Hara.
Oh, Susie!
We don't call her Sugar Tongue Susie for nothing.
Okay, I kind of don't want to take the bait here, because I'm hoping.
Uh-oh.
I'm still hoping. I mean, Susie is just so affable and nice. And, you know, that hat meeting, of course, where they invited the Association of Faith Communities to come in and know about their transitional encampment plan. That was really interesting, and I really just hope that more people who care...
Except that when she got to city council 6 hours later, she had nothing but a dissing report on the so-called, transitional encampments. Although transition to what has never been made clear.
Yeah, and how about Cynthia Matthews making sure it was only good for 30 days, and that all freedoms and self-governance that the homeless people might have had was pretty much canceled out? And that, I don't know, it just really got to be another nightmare of, we're going to set up a camp that's not going to be very helpful.
But they aren't setting up a camp. That's because Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl made it clear that that was an alternative that was not doable. And therefore, you needed instead a safe sleeping zone in a parking lot at night.
Right, that's true.
That was removed from consideration.
Right.
And that was done on the recommendation, mind you, of Drew Glover, who introduced that resolution that then passed, which is to say that the April 17th deadline is not going to be lifted, although he didn't put it that way. He wanted to see it lifted. He requested it, but he did not put it into a resolution, and instead he said, he essentially affirmed, well, then I move that they'll be opening a safe sleeping zone and this Boneyard campground and the two shelters that are already open, and one of them is full and one of them is not. I'm getting various figures from that. So in other words, he actually, instead of challenging O'Hara, I mean, he did say, well, what about these other things? When she said, well, they're no good. You can't use the Poganip. You can't use the parking garages. He didn't say, wait a minute. Okay. I want to re-examine that. No. He said, well, if that's the case, then we'll do exactly what you suggest, Susie.
Well, no.
That's exactly what he did.
Okay. So you're making a good point to talk about how Drew is now being stymied. He's being blocked.
Colluding with him.
No. Well, let's. Okay, I just want to say here, we have a massive problem going down on city council that the general public needs to know about. And it's been going on since at least mid-January in terms of the new council, you know, the new council. Items not being allowed to be agendized. They can't even get together and meet with the entire council because Martine Watkins is refusing.
That's the mayor.
The mayor is refusing to get this meeting scheduled.
I know you said this, but however, I want to point.
No.
I want to ask you, because you were there. You were there late at night during the council meeting.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say.
Now, what did anyone attempt to agendize item? I understand Chris Krohn tried to.
Yes, he did.
And what exactly happened there?
Okay, it's honestly, Robert, it's too much for me to squeeze in all the detail. This is what I will say.
I'll wait. Go ahead.
The agenda item that Chris Crum, very assertively, by the way, attempted to agendize, followed on the heels of a long discussion and a presentation by some extremely wonderful, knowledgeable parking experts, okay, who continually were pointing out that Santa Cruz actually has many open parking spots. Okay, we don't need more parking spots, but they are on the outskirts of downtown, on which means like two blocks away from the central parking things. So this was a wonderful presentation. And Dettel, I think his name is Dettel. Is that right?
Mark or Matt or something.
No, but his last name is Dettel. Can I just say that name enough? Because everybody should know that name, because he is one of the people, the old guard of Cynthia Matthews, Martine Bernal, Dettel, and these people who are making sure that our city is not going to be anything but...
Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl.
Okay. For the rich, Dettel and Bernal and Matthews are leading this charge, and Martine's, following along, and so is Donna Myers, and so they have this block, okay? So what has started to happen is because Chris and Sandy and Drew, who actually have to maintain their composure, unlike me in the audience who ended up screaming. Do you want to hear how I screamed?
Sure, go ahead.
I'll have to step away from the mic. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm going to go about 10 feet away. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
She's walking away now, folks.
Yes. You are obstructing the council's business. You are lying.
Okay, so...
Thank you.
They can't do that. They have to be nice. They have to get along with each other.
They can still make a motion for something on the agenda.
They have been trying, Robert. You haven't been able to stay for those late hours.
I'm asking you what happened.
So, Chris... Okay, following this wonderful presentation, and then it became clear that this guy Jim, this other guy Dettel, and Claire, unfortunately, because I feel like she's being, they're...
Staff members.
She's a staff member that's being taken down this primrose path by Dettel and Jim. They just completely opposed everything that the consultants had said about, you know, housing and transportation and parking and all the wonderful things we could do. So Sandy began the whole thing by saying, well, I'm getting two sets of data here. How do I know how to make a decision? Because they just don't want to move forward. So that's how it really started. Mm-hmm. And then, on the heels of that, Chris made this motion, and it was about the Red Church wanting to build affordable housing on their lot, which is very much related to this parking issue and the so-called parking garage, which is what Dettel and Matthews and Bernal want. And so then what happened is Justin, actually, for once, actually piped up a little bit and said... So Sandy said, well, Chris, I can't really do what you want until I have the information that's necessary. And then this discussion ensued. And it's really here that the whole thing needs to be understood, is this discussion happened because Sandy was trying to make a decision. And she wanted to support Chris, but she also felt like to really make an actual decision, she needed the information. And then it became clear that they can't have these meetings because Matthews, Martine, Watkins, et al. Are refusing to let them have these meetings. So,
and there are a couple of factors to consider here. It is true that Watkins has been keeping stuff off the main city council agenda. That's point one. So it doesn't even come up at regular council meetings where people are allowed to actually sit in a group of four, five, six, or seven. Other than that, if you're outside a council meeting, council members other than three are not allowed to get together and talk about council business. It is considered a violation of the Brown Act. You have to do it by creating an agenda, noticing that it's going to happen, letting the public know 72 hours in advance, and so forth. But what Elise here does not say, and what I determined as I listened to the city council, the very end of the evening session on March 19th, which you can find online now, was that it was Sandy Brown who stopped the agenda item from being put on by four votes that would have said, reconsider the library, consider affordable housing in the parking lot area, were the next to the Calvary Episcopal Church, and there was some third item as well. That was something Chris Krohn directed to be put on the next agenda. He seemed to have four votes for it, but Brown wouldn't vote for it, and that made him, unfortunately, timidly withdraw it. So that was what I think you'll find, too, if you listen to the and look at the video that's now available online at the city website. But let's hear a little more.
Justin finally piped up, like I just said a few seconds ago, and he goes, he's shaking his head back and forth, just total exasperation. So now on the council we have Chris Krohn demonstrating huge frustration as calmly as he did.
What was his motion?
It was about the affordable housing on the Red Church.
Now, was it to actually do something at that session or to put it on the next
meeting? Whole thing broke down because what's happening, as it became clear that night, and this is what I had that reaction to where I was yelling, was the mayor, Matthews, Bernal, Donna Myers, are refusing to let these people come together to set meeting dates, to set meetings, to discuss their work priorities, so they can't make decisions.
Actually, that's, again, it's not really entirely true. What's true is that Brown would not allow this matter to be agendized on the next agenda, and it isn't that Matthews and company are stopping the city council members from meeting. That's the Brown Act that stops them. But what is happening is Mayor Watkins and City Manager Martine Bernal are refusing to put items on the agenda unless they are directed to do so at a prior meeting. And that's exactly what Krohn started to try to do. Then when Brown said she wouldn't support it, and he kept asking, well, how can I get you to support it? Can you do it in, can we have such a meeting in 60 days and 90 days? Can it be on the agenda? And she just said, well, I want to have something first, some kind of broader description of broader priorities in the community and so forth. In other words, he was breaking off from the attempt to get certain specific items addressed, which need to be done, in my view. And Elise apparently has a different perspective on that, which I think is in error, but that's just what I think.
Things are not able to
the
be
agendized.
The
question I have to ask, and you're not answering.
Yes, I am.
No.
You need to watch the video.
My question is this, and if you have an answer, I want to hear it.
Okay.
Did Krohn move to put this item on the next agenda? Yes, no, or maybe?
Yes, he did multiple times. He was very persistent.
And what was the vote on that item?
But he wasn't persistent. He withdrew the item. That's the problem. And he withdrew it because he couldn't get support from Sandy Brown, supposedly a progressive. That's the strange, sad story. And perhaps we'll know more about it as the years proceed.
They wouldn't let him.
Okay, who stopped the vote?
Basically, it was Matthews.
They have three members. How can they stop the vote with three members?
No, it didn't proceed to a vote. It did not proceed to a vote.
Why
because
not?
Sandy couldn't...
To put it on the agenda? She couldn't vote to put it on the agenda next time? I don't believe
okay,
it.
Okay, well, maybe I'm getting the... there was a lot going down, by the way.
I understand. I'll look it up.
People need to be there. People need to stay to the end of these meetings.
I'm exhausted.
No,
sorry.
I'm sorry. Not you, but others.
You can't
other
do
people.
Michael.
Citizens.
I don't want to do it. I refuse.
People who care about democracy.
There you go.
Hello.
Hello.
And so we're having a problem with obstruction of the council business. The council has literally been unable to conduct business since mid-January.
I understand. Now, you're repeating yourself. So, therefore, I want you the next time, I will personally, perhaps, try to look at this late-night video.
Please do.
It's so exciting. And see what happens. You, too, should, because you really need to answer that question. It's really an important one, because it isn't that hard for a council member to insist on a vote.
He really did.
Well,
by the way, he went for it. And if I'm remembering correctly, the issue became... They needed Sandy's vote.
Yeah, but to put it on the agenda, they needed
something
a vote?
Like that, yes.
Well, then why wouldn't she put it on the agenda? That's
because
ridiculous.
Because she felt she needed to have more information. Now, maybe I'm conflating.
Then you do it as an informational session. You know, I mean,
they won't let it happen.
You can't. You misunderstand.
Okay, and you need to look at
this. You're not listening to me. You're not listening. The reality is, if you want to put something on the agenda for an informational session at the city council, four votes does it, no matter what.
They couldn't get the votes.
That four votes are for the progressive majority. Then they're fucked up.
We only have three progressives, for
but,
sure.
But Cummings was willing to vote for that.
Cummings also got into this discussion, and this is why I really wish you would look at it. That
I will.
They're not able...
Let's leave it there.
Okay.
Because we don't really know what happened until we look at it.
I knew it did!
But then if you know, then I'll know, too, when I look at it.
Okay.
And we've been talking with...
This is Elise.
Thank you, Elise.
Thank you, Robert.
It's always stimulating. Sometimes a little too stimulating.
Stop! The report.
An old woman approached me just the other day. I lived in Washington, D.C. She began to say, they all sang We Shall Overcome back in 1964. Where did that all go now that it's needed even more? I thought I should have an answer. I think I should now too. But when I look around me now, I'm afraid I haven't a clue. With the country and the world sinking deeper in the mire, in this age of famine, flood, and fire. Walking on the ashes through the toxic, hazy air, past the chimneys, the only thing still standing there. Now if we think ahead, seven generations, what little might remain of what we call civilization? It was maybe damned to start with, but what a thing to comprehend, that you and I and our grandchildren may be the ones to watch it end. Now that it is past the time when it's only down to the wire, in this age of famine, flood, and fire. I used to marvel at the people going out and having fun. I wonder if they thought of all that which must be done. Now it's too late to join them in the ignorance and bliss. I'll just wonder as I watch them, might their children live like this? All the pot in California cannot numb the pain, and sometimes I try to figure out in the time that still remains, how would I spend the rest of it just fulfilling my desire in this age of famine, flood, and fire. Perhaps a scientific breakthrough will allow us all to live, now that industry has robbed the earth of all it had to give. Maybe from the ashes, new life will arise that will not be burdened by what I've witnessed with these eyes. Perhaps some global spring will be born out of the flood. A great forest will grow up from somewhere beneath the mud. But if I said I was an optimist, then I would be a liar in this age of famine, flood, and fire. In this age of famine, flood, and fire.
And that is Famine, Flood, and Fire by David Rovics from Ballad of a Wobbly. Again, available free online, but you can also kick down to his ability to write, compose, and sing more songs. So check it out. Maybe I will do the same. And that's really all I've got time for on this Sunday. You might wander over to Depot Park and see what's happening, although it probably is breaking up right now. Those are the folks who want to make sure that no dirty, ugly, filthy, dangerous homeless people show up there at a sleeping zone to threaten their well-being and the safety of their children. Kind of ridiculous and yet kind of frightening. And in a way, the whole Depot Park proposal in and of itself is simply an excuse to get rid of the Ross camp. Because it's not really, it's an excuse, but it's not an alternative. And therefore, the Ross camp, campers, some of them anyway, are likely to continue to stay there. Although I can't speak for them. I don't know what they're going to do. I know that some are working on this lawsuit, and that's something that we'll be talking about at the next Wednesday Conscience and Action meeting, and working to help them get together the depositions for the plaintiffs and get them into court and raise the issue in the community. That's 11 o'clock on Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Then at noon, there's the Huff meeting that follows. And I think it may well be that Anthony Prince will be back again at 2 o'clock out at the Ross camp, although I'm not sure that that is a confirmed date yet. Anyway, that's it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Hope you found some of it interesting. I went on longer than I expected, but hey, that's how it goes. Back again on Thursday with another edition, perhaps, or at least that's the schedule, although it schedule could well change. So be ready for anything. Hey, at least be ready for, well, I would say support free radio or other activists in the community who are trying to support basic civil rights for folks who are poor, because that's really where it begins, at that level, I think. Anyway, talk to you again. If you have anything you want to add to what you've heard, or if you want to be on the air yourself, or if you're interested in free radio, give me a call at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833. And I will, if I don't directly pick up, I'll get back to you. Thanks for listening.